And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Chris Hammer. Chris is a leading Australian crime fiction novelist, the author of international bestsellers Scrublands and Silver. Chris has a bachelor's degree in journalism from Charles Sturt University and a master's degree in international relations from the Australian National University. His first book, The River, published in 2010 to critical acclaim, was the ACT Book of the Year. Scrublands won the UK Crime Writers Association John Creasy Debut Dagger Award. But before turning to fiction, Chris was a journalist for more than 30 years, reporting for more than 30 countries on 6 continents for SBS TV. He was chief correspondent for The Bulletin, senior writer for The Age, and online political editor for The Age and The Sydney Morning Herald. His new book is Trust. Chris, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
G'day, Bill. Nice to be with you.
Trust is set in a city riven with corruption and nepotism, privilege and power. Seems a bit familiar to those of us living in Sydney at the moment. Did your years as a journalist help you to paint that picture?
Look, I think it has. I mean, there's various reasons why the book is set in Sydney. The first two books, Scrublands and Silver, were set in small country towns. But part of the reason is, yeah, it's a story about corruption and conspiracy and organised crime and money laundering, political interference. Where better to set a story like that than Sydney?
You have to agree. And the main character in Trust is an Australian journalist, Martin Scarsden. Martin could be described as damaged. Did you experience people like that in your journalistic career?
Yeah, so Martin's the lead character, if you like, in all three books. Although I should add quickly that Trust can absolutely be read as a standalone. Mm. You don't have to have read the previous two books. He's the main character in Trust. His partner, Mandy or Mandalay Blondes, Pickle Billing too. So half the story is told from his point of view and half from hers, sort of alternating chapters. Some of what he does and how he goes about things are based on my own experience as a journalist, but his personality and the sort of emotionally damaged nature of him, particularly at the start of the books, is based on war correspondence I'd made in my days as a roving foreign correspondent for SBS. I spent two long stints of about 4 years each travelling internationally. Often the stories I was doing weren't conflict stories, but occasionally I would go to, you know, some hot spot somewhere and I'd meet these blokes, often photographers, camera operators, and they were all suffering post-traumatic stress because they'd all seen too much. So he's loosely based on some of those people I met.
You mentioned then Mandy Blonde, and Trust is the first of your books to have her voice as well as that of Martin. Is that to provide perhaps another perspective on the story?
No, well, that's one of the effects it has, but really what happens, the first two books, Scrublands and Silver, as you say, are told pretty much exclusively from Martin's point of view. Not told in the first person, but he's the person who leads us through the story. He's in every scene. We can read what Martin is thinking, but we only have his impressions about what other people are thinking. But with his third book, I wanted to find out what had happened in Mandy's past. And it soon became apparent that Martin, for some of the reasons we've already covered, just wasn't equipped to tell her story or get inside her head, because although as a journalist he can be quite perceptive, he's not that emotionally perceptive. So I thought of flipping it and telling the whole book from her point of view, but there'd be issues there. So instead, we have two points of view, Martin and Mandy's, and as I said, they kind of alternate chapter by chapter. so we can follow her as she discovers what's happened in her past, because what she thinks has happened isn't really the case, and as she comes to terms with that, sort of emotionally as well as intellectually, if you like. So, but one of the great sort of upshots of that, not planned at all, is the chapters are shorter and the book's a lot pacier. So if anyone's read Scrublands and Silver and thinks they're page turners, I think Trust is even more of a page turner, because the pace of it is faster and it builds up to this kind of crescendo.
And is it hard to write authentically as a female, being a male?
It's funny, I often get asked this question, and I wonder if female authors are asked the opposite. Or maybe it's just that women generally are more perceptive about men than the other way around. Writing Mandy was a little bit tricky, not because she's a woman, but because she's a bit fractured and inconsistent. So, you know, I wanted to convey that to the reader, but not in such a way as it was confusing. Or, you know, they thought, oh, you know, hang on, she's saying here and now she's saying completely different. So if there were any consistencies there, it was clear why she was like that. But no, it's actually it's good fun writing, getting into the heads of these characters. And even the characters who aren't point of view characters, I like to try and make them as interesting as I can, you know, quirky or amusing or sinister or something like that. But as I write them, they tend to develop more and more. And I don't like having characters that are, you know, all good or all bad. So even the people who are bad, if you like, and committing awful crimes, I want to understand why they're doing that. And I want the readers to sort of understand the choices that those people make. It's, you know, if they kill someone, it's not simply because they're having a bad day or, you know, they're a killer, in quotation marks. So it's one of the joys, I think, of writing, is you can sort of make up characters and get inside their head, and then they start, you know, they start telling you what they want to do. It's one of the joys and, I guess, one of the magical elements of writing a book.
I can see that you do enjoy getting into those characters. But so what drew you, first of all, from being an international journalist to being an international crime novelist?
Well, there's a couple of things. I kind of got the sense that my journalistic career was coming to an end as the whole news industry shrank. And indeed, just as Scrublands was being accepted, I lost my job, along with a whole swathe of other people working for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. By that stage, I was running a video production unit, and they decided that they'd get rid of video. So part of it was I didn't have a choice. You know, I lost my job. But the attraction of writing, I wrote, as you said in your introduction, I wrote some non-fiction books. And what I found from that is I really liked writing. So as I was working away in my day job, I just started writing for the pleasure of it, thinking I can write a fiction book that's good enough to get published. But I wasn't really thinking of a career or anything like that. So when Scrublands came out, I got this fantastic book deal and it did really well. And suddenly I am a writer. It is what I do for a living. I was kind of more surprised, I think, than anybody else. So it wasn't, that's a long way of saying, it wasn't completely planned. It just happened because I liked writing.
And we're speaking today with Chris Hammer, the writer, and about his new book called Trust. Chris, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song for the program, and I think you've picked a good one.
Yeah, look, I've thought of a few, but this one, Paperback Writer by The Beatles, I think kind of sums me up in some ways.
Paperback Writer. Yes, sir, oh, madam, will you read my book? It took me years to write. Will you take a look? It's based on a novel by a man named Lear, and I need a job, so I want to be a paperback writer. Paperback writer.
And that was Paperback Writer by The Beatles, which was specially chosen for us today by our guest Chris Hammer, who is the author of a new book called Trust. Chris, your book now, Trust, is it's set in Sydney, it's set in the present day, and I guess in Sydney, perhaps not as much as in Melbourne, but the main thing on our minds at the moment is COVID-19. Did you have to deal with that in the book?
Look, I did. It kind of snuck up on me. There's quite a long lag between the time you finish a book and it gets published. So I was finishing the manuscript in about the first week of February. And back then, COVID was in the news, but it was this mystery disease killing people in China. But within a few short weeks, you know, we were all in lockdown. And I'd started the editing process with the publishers, which goes over a period of, you know, several months. And I thought, well, boy, how am I going to deal with COVID? Because, as you said, the story is set in the present day. And my initial thought was, look, I'll just ignore it. You know, readers will accept that. You know, they can just imagine it was, you know, the story set last year or something. The trouble is that in the book already there was a lot of references to the bushfires of last summer. And there's a couple of days in the story where Sydney is again cloaked in bushfire smoke. And I was thinking, no, this will be strange to be referencing so strongly one disaster from last year, but with no mention of the other. So the solution I came up with is I moved the time frame forward slightly. So it's more like maybe this time next year and the pandemic is over. Now, it doesn't say why it's over. It doesn't say whether it's a vaccine or a miracle treatment or, you know, we're just lockdowns worked or anything like that. It's just gone. But the effect of it is still being felt, you know, the economic effects. So there's still businesses that are struggling or have gone out of business and people have lost their jobs and homeless people and that. And actually, it just reinforces the mood that was in the book anyway. So I was sort of fortunate that I hadn't written some sort of sunny, sort of optimistic Sydney in the first place. For example, in the book, it's set in Sydney, but it's not tourist Sydney. It's not the harbour. It's not the Opera House. It's not Bondi Beach. It's not that. It's a sort of a more gritty inner city sort of feel. So just this, every now and then, this reference to COVID, I think just helps reinforce the mood. So that's how I dealt with it. I've been reading a few books lately, advanced copies before that's been published. And a couple of writers have done it really well. They've set their stories and just near the end, you get this sense that COVID is starting to emerge from China. So instead of moving their timeline forward, they've taken it back a bit to say the end of last year or the start of this year. But it's going to be interesting to see how people deal with COVID because, as I said, I was delivering the book in February, but it's only just been published in October. So it's a tricky thing for people who are writing books now because they just don't know where we're going to be in 6 months' time.
Yeah, there are so many effects of COVID, and I must admit that's not one that I'd thought of, but how it might affect authors. But, yeah, I can see that. Perhaps without giving any spoilers, how would you describe Trust?
Trust is a crime fiction set in Australia. It's probably got a bit more of a thriller element to it. It starts off right from the word go. I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but this is like the first chapter. You get quite a dramatic prologue that's set in the past. In the first chapter, Mandy is kidnapped. Martin hears her screaming on the phone, races to their house. She's gone. There's an unconscious cop on the floor of their living room. And pretty quickly, he learns that a body has been found in Sydney of an undercover cop who disappeared 5 years ago. Everyone had thought he'd stolen a bunch of money, like millions of dollars, and fled overseas. Now we find out actually he's been murdered. No one knows where the money is. That's all pretty much in the first chapter or two. And then Martin goes to Sydney looking for Mandy. So it's pacey, right, kind of from the word go. And because you've got the dual points of view, Martin and Mandy, you know, if something's happening to one of them, then there's something else happening to the other. So, yeah, I think it's traditional crime, but with quite a lot of action in it.
Your novel, Scrublands, was set in a small country town in the drought, and then your novel, Silver, was on the Australian coastline. Now Trust is set in Sydney. Do you think the environment changes the way people behave?
Well, in my books, they definitely do. Mm. I think in real life, they do too. I mean, my book, Scrublands, was set in a small town in the middle of a drought, an irrigation town that has no water. So it's pretty desperate. But that was based on my real-life experience as travelling around at the height of the millennial drought in about 2008, 2009, when I was researching my book, The River. So, and definitely, of course, the drought did really affect people in those small country towns. On one hand, there was the kind of the desperation. There were people walking off their farms. There were banks foreclosing. There was the ever-present spectre of suicide. And on the other hand, there was this amazing kind of community spirit in many of those towns as people sort of banded together and, you know, the determination to see the drought through. So that was real life. So it wasn't that difficult in some ways to reimagine that for a fiction book. And the same in Silver. It's a former struggle town on the coast that's been touted as the next big thing, the next Byron Bay. So that gives the characters a different feel. But those towns exist in real life, you know, up on the north coast of New South Wales, where there's more of a, you know, it's more of a boom time, I guess. With Sydney, it's not an imagined place, unlike the other two, but it's an impressionistic place. I'm not setting out to give an accurate description of Sydney. I'm giving it a certain mood, which then informs, if you like, the mood of the characters in the book and creates an atmosphere in a world that the readers can enter and enjoy.
And do you think that gives it a particular appeal to your overseas audience, that they can sort of get an opening into life in Australia?
Yeah, look, this seems to be the case. Australian rural crime and Australian crime has suddenly become very popular in the UK and the US following the really breakthrough success of Jane Harper and her book The Dry. I think many of us are benefiting from her success. And the interesting thing is, when I wrote Scrublands and when I've written the subsequent books, I haven't really thought about the international audience at all. I haven't tried to pander to them or, you know, over-explain bits of Australian life or the characteristic of people. For example, we often use irony in our dialogue, which is the English probably are more attuned to than, say, the Americans, but I haven't tried to adjust for that. But yet people seem to pick up on it. Well, it may be enough of the Australian culture and TV and films and whatever has gotten through to those places, but it doesn't seem to be a distraction for them, and if anything, it seems to be a plus, a bonus. There's a group of readers internationally, including in translation. So Scrublands and Silver have already been translated into another number of languages, I mean, including Chinese and Russian. I'm really happy that Scrublands and Silver have been translated into Norwegian, you know, the home of Scandi Noir, and suddenly they're reading, you know, Australian books in translation. So, and I'm not the only author who's experiencing this. So it's a great thing, and it's great that people are interested in this view of Australian life.
Yeah, I mean, do you see Australia perhaps as a good setting for crime? I mean, I'm just thinking back to some of the weird things that happened in the Northern Territory. You know, going back to Lindy Chamberlain, but then, you know, there was another fellow killed on the highway in very mysterious circumstances. Is that do you see that as a fertile ground for yourself?
Oh, for sure, because one of the things about Australia is there are so many different landscapes and climates that you can explore here. So at the moment, you see that there's three or four books set in Tasmania, for example, and that's a whole different environment. My book's set in the city. Some are on the coast, some have been set in the mountains. You know, you've got snow, you've got tropics, you've got, you know, crocodiles, you've got deserts. So I think we're really spoiled for choice for different settings that can, for different books. Whereas opposed to, say, you know, if you're a writer in England, there's probably only two or three landscapes you could explore like that.
And I know some people who are not good readers, in fact, they might describe themselves as reading defectives, but they still love a good murder mystery. What do you think it is about murder mysteries that has made these books, and yours in particular, so successful?
Well, I think you can do a lot with a murder mystery. So all readers are different. And some people can read my books and they just like it for the plot. So people like a good plot that drives the story forward. But then you can add other things to it. The setting can be really important. The characters, some of the moral and ethical choices that the characters make may give the reader pause for thought. You know, one reader, the next reader might not care less about that. They just might want to find out, you know, just follow the plot sort of thing. But the great thing, that's the great thing about crime. It can work, these books can work on several different levels and appeal to, you know, different types of readers. I mean, I think that's one of the appeals. It's certainly at the moment hit a real streak. There's a lot of really good Australian crime books that people are reading. And I think also there's a lot of good crime on television. You know, you can binge on, you know, iView or SBS On Demand or, you know, Netflix or any of those streaming services. They've all got these really good crime shows. And particularly during lockdown, you can watch a whole series over a few days instead of the old traditional, back in the day, you had to wait a week for it to, you know, pop up on telly.
Do you think there is an Australian style of writing?
Oh, look, we're all different, but often there's a little bit of humour, a bit of the laconic Australian humour creeps in, you know, in some writers more than others. There's a sense of, I guess, independence. You often get people not relying just on, say, the police to solve crimes, but, you know, people are trying to have, you know, more agency, if you like, by themselves. So there's probably a few little quirks like that. The trouble is, once you start generalising too far, you can start thinking of exceptions. And that, I guess, goes to the breadth of good Australian crime at the moment. There's a bunch of Michael Robotham has just won the UK Crime Writers Association Gold Dagger for the second time. And this is a huge award because it's for the best crime book published in UK in the past year. And so it's open to all the British writers, all the American writers, Australians, Canadians. And he's won it twice now. Jane Harper's huge, like Tiernan, Christian White, Candace Fox, you know, the list goes on and on. And, you know, if anyone wants to read any of these books or you enjoy any of them, I mean, your local bookstore can certainly point you towards plenty of others, as indeed can your local library.
Now, we've mentioned that your books have all been set in Australia. Just wondering, if we peek into the future, are there any overseas plans for your characters?
No, look, I haven't. I mean, I've spent a lot of time overseas, particularly as a correspondent, which gives you a view into countries that you never get as a tourist, of course. And I've spent time, you know, as a tourist overseas too. But I've got no inclination at all to set a book overseas. It may be at some time, you know, I get a good idea for like a more of a spy espionage type novel, but I've got no ideas for that or any real inclination at this stage. Now, I got to say, I like Australia as a setting.
We're just about running out of time, unfortunately, Chris. But look, we've been speaking to Chris Hammer, who is the author of a wonderful new book called Trust. And if any of our listeners would like to get in touch with us about this show or would like to hear it again, you can go to the website dadsontheair.com.au. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And I was going to ask you, Chris, if you could play us out on your new silent guitar, but it doesn't really work on radio, I think. So,
no.
So I'd just like to give a special thank you. Thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
Look, thank you so much for having me. It's real fun.
And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.